they chased their answers, travelers through time and space, stopping anywhere long enough to learn, but briefly enough to escape involvement. The light in the distance grows brighter, even as the surroundings grow ever more bizarre. Questions grow darker, answers more involved, until reality itself becomes an academic concept, fit only to be dissected over a pleasant cup of tea.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, to Pagan Chaos Magic, the podcast, episode 11. Excuse the voice, please. I am on the upside of a nasty summer cold. So, 3:42 in the morning, and it's September 22nd? No, since it's the morning, it's the 23rd. Thank the lovely Faken for charging me up with a wonderful bit of let's put it this way. I am really very, 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 very happy that my young son is sleeping through the night now and not waking up every 2 or 3 hours to nurse, and he's sleeping through the night. And that gives adults opportunities to play, because the wife is not completely exhausted without, you know, ever getting a solid 4 hours in a row of sleep. So, I'm on a tantric buzz right now. Not true tantra. I'm not trained in it. But I'm familiar with some of the techniques, and I'm riding the high. Let's get right into some music. The artist's name is Zera, X-E-R-A. The album, I'm just going to spell it, it's L-L-I-E-N-D-E-S. L-L-I-E-N-D-E-S. This is really good techno-celt. There I go using that word good again for some music, but good techno-celt is hard to find. A lot of modern artists will take a couple of bagpipe tracks and maybe a fiddle track and mix a bunch of stuff in that's all techno and no celt, nothing but modern techno. This, well, give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy this. love that tune. The tune is the same as the album name. It's a pretty darn good album. Got it from Jamendo. I can recommend that artist. Believe there's two or three other albums available. That album alone, I think, is like somewhere between 13 and 15 tracks. I mean, it's just chock full of some good stuff. I particularly like that piece. There's some other good stuff on there, 1934, stuff like that, but we'll play that on a different podcast. I've been tossing around in my head what I wanted to talk about on the show, and, well, I think I'm going to clean up a couple of loose ends and play some more good music. Hoping you're going to enjoy this stuff. I've got some more stuff tonight from Tenpenny Joke off their Ambush on All Sides album. I've got some Voltaire, got some Emma Wallace. I think you're going to enjoy it. And to fit in all the good music tonight, I'm going to go ahead and throw something up right away again. This is Hungry Lucy. It's off the album Glow, G-L-O. And the name of the track is In the Circle. Now, not all of Hungry Lucy stuff is necessarily as witchy as this is, but and they don't have anything pagan or occult labeled specifically, but if this is not a witchy tune, I don't know what is. In the Circle. Thank you. tune. That was Hungry Lucy in the Circle from the album Glow. Now, I was going to talk about pop culture and the astral plane. And, well, Chaos Mage, diverting left turn. We are going to get to that. It's a wonderful topic, and it's going to cover more than a podcast or two. I was shuffling through my notes here while the tune was playing, because I listen to every tune as I put it up to keep my brain in sync with the music, because if you pull nothing out of the show, if you think I'm a total nutball, don't know what I'm talking about, all that is fine. I hope you're at least enjoying the music. And I hope you're enjoying some of the references. I haven't got a chance to answer all of the email I've gotten recently, but thanks, guys, for the pats on the back. Surprisingly little negative feedback through the email, and I appreciate that. I like the conversations that I've had. There's a person out there who told me, really, man, could you lay off the quantum physics? I don't think that's how it works anyway, and he tossed some ether theory in my lap. And, brother, I'm researching that. Ether theory, you know, Sir Isaac Newton backed it. He believed it was the explanation for a lot of effects. I believe including gravity. Like I said, I just started researching it. Yeah, hey, man, if you can toss me something that Isaac Newton believed in that is contrary to my view of physics, I'm interested. Three-quarters of everything that Isaac Newton ever wrote was about, catch this, alchemy, metaphysics, and religion. Three-quarters of everything that the man who wrote the Principia Mathematica, the book that revolutionized math for Homo sapiens, the man who was made a British knight and was such a genius that despite a slow onset of mercury poisoning from medication that he took, he managed to pull together an explanation and mathematical principles of laws of the universe that are in most cases irrefutable in terms of reproducibility on the physical plane. Though odd things do happen, because as we know, it's all about the probabilities, brothers and sisters. It's just that some things are very, very probable. An apple acting the same way every time you drop it, time after time, same speed, same fall toward the earth pulled by gravity until it smacks into the ground. All of these things are repeatable. Usually. Every once in a while, though, you gotta love those statistical blips, because they drive the statisticians crazy. If you've ever taken a statistics course, you know what I mean. I remember sitting there when I really started to get a feel for the class and what they were trying to teach me, and I realized, oh my god, statistics is nothing more than measurement of a norm. The whole purpose of statistics, well, not the whole purpose, but one of the hugest pieces of statistics is simply crossing off, X-ing off the statistical blips, refusing to look at them, and instead looking at where the scattering of data clumps most heavily. But, you know, strange shit happens. If you don't believe me, just wait till I do the segment on Charles Fort. Opened my eyes to a lot of things very young, that man did. Thank you, sir. I know you've passed long ago from this plane, but I don't think you get nearly enough credit for pointing out the obvious that, oh yeah? You want to measure things? Well, here's the weird stuff that you don't want to look at. Okay, to bring this all back around, because this was getting to a point before I started rambling too far. Speaking of great books, like the Principia Mathematica, I'm really excited about something I read today. Okay, Mojo and Sparrow, I'm going to compliment you guys again, and I'm not trying to be obsequious here, but you just keep nailing great stuff. I've heard Mojo talk about the blog The Wild Hunt before, several times. And, you know, I was like, well, I had a few minutes, and I came up, I decided to go surfing on over. And Wow, Jason, that's really an impressive piece of work that you have assembled there. And on his blog is a entry about a new book, a book I had never heard of, by Jung, called The Red Book. Now, Jung almost had me change careers midstream. His ideas on the collective unconscious of man were very, they made a lot of sense to me as a young man, before I really even considered that there might be, more to things, there more to life. I studied Jung a bit and was very fascinated by his views. Now, I'm just going to read to you the blog entry called The Most Important Grimoire of Our Modern Age. Since he is Creative Commons licensed, I don't think he's going to mind as long as I don't butcher this. In 1913, Carl Jung, the founder of analytical psychology, experienced a prolonged confrontation with the unconscious, where he daily wrestled with visions, heard inner voices, and explored his own vast dreamscape for 6 years, beginning just before World War I and ending shortly after its close. His inner turmoil echoed the chaos erupting all around him. During this time, Jung didn't merely experience these events. He rose to meet and catalog them, and created a legendary, never printed and never finished chronicle of his underworld journey called Liber Novus. I assume that's how you pronounce Novus. I don't speak Latin. Something I never managed to cram in. Jason has the translation here as New Book. In the process, Liber Novus, or the Red Book, as it became known due to its work being done in a large red notebook, became legendary among Jungians. Described alternately as holding infinite wisdom and being psychotic by the few who ever got a glimpse of it. Now, after many years, the heirs of Carl Jung have agreed to allow this lost text to see print for the first time. Now, he breaks into a quote here. I'm not sure who he is quoting. I think it is the intro released on the book. Anytime someone did ask to see the Red Book, family members said, without hesitation and sometimes without decorum, no. The book was private, they asserted, an intensely personal work. In 1989, an American analyst named Stephen Martin, who was then the editor of a Jungian journal and now directs a Jungian non-profit foundation, visited Jung's son and inquired about the Red Book. The question was met with a vehemence that surprised him. Franz Jung, an otherwise genial and gracious man, reacted sharply, nearly with anger. Martin later wrote in his foundation's newsletter, saying that, in no uncertain terms, that Martin could not see the Red Book, nor could he ever imagine that it would be published. And yet, Carl Jung's secret Red Book, scanned, translated, and footnoted, will be in stores early next month, published by W.W. Norton, and billed as the most influential unpublished work in the history of psychology. Surely it is a victory for someone, but it is too early yet to say for whom. And that's the end of that quote. Jason goes on with, this October, when the veils between the worlds are thin, you can purchase a deluxe scanned, translated, and footnoted copy of the Red Book, and he has a link to that for $195. Or $105 through Amazon.com, and he has a link to that as well. What can the reader expect after they shell out for this tome? Well, in a mythological and archetypal sense, a little bit of everything. And here he goes back to another quote after a beautiful picture of one of the illustrations by Jung in the Red Book. I had no idea this guy was this good of an artist. Beautiful. The quote goes, the footnotes map both Jungian Sonu Shamdasani's journey and Jung's. They include references to Faust, Keats, Ovid, the Norse gods Odin, and Thor, the Egyptian deities Isis and Osiris, the Greek goddess Hecate, ancient Gnostic texts, Greek Hyborians, King Herod, the Old Testament, the New Testament, Nietzsche's Zarathustra, astrology, the artist Giacometti, hope I'm pronouncing that right, and the alchemical formulation of gold. And that's just naming a few. The central premise of the book, Shyam Dasani told me, was that Jung had become disillusioned with scientific rationalism, what he called the spirit of the times. And over the course of many Quixotic encounters with his own soul and other inner figures, he comes to know and appreciate the spirit of the depths, a field that makes room for magic, coincidence, and the mythological metaphors delivered by dreams. There's where the quote ends, and Jason continues, "To say that Jung's work is important to the later development of modern paganism as we know it would be something of an understatement. So much of the language and the ideas we use in processing our own inner workings and journeys are touched by the terms and ideas pioneered by him. Now the world will see what is perhaps Jung's most personal work, a psychological grimoire that has acquired such an air of mystery and wonder that it seems almost unreal that it is being mass-produced now. This could be the most important esoteric work to be published in decades. And while it most likely won't shift the way things work in the world of analytical Jungian psychology, it could end up having deep reverberations through the occult world. Makes me wish I was the kind of guy who had $100 to randomly spend on a single book. Maybe I'll put it on my Yule list." And he ends there, and I sympathize with you there, brother. Oh, what a terrible time to be unemployed. Someday I will own that book. Thoroughly impressive blog, wildhunt.org. Highly recommend it. Thanks for the tip, Mojo. It's great stuff. Let's play some music. Let's play some Voltaire. He's not Creative Commons licensed, but he hasn't responded to my email, but he does have a podcast. And I don't think he's going to be ticked off at me for playing his stuff, because his podcast is just songs that he's released to the public that you can get a preview of, and the two songs I've already played by him are on that podcast. This one's not. It's off of the album Almost Human, but it's really, really a great tune. Apropos, I'm going to warn you, please do not knee-jerk when you hear the first line of this song. Run with it. Don't hyperventilate. This is Voltaire, God Thinks. And by the end of it, I think you'll get what he's talking about.
Must be punished, God thinks. The white man is Satan. God, they know what God thinks. God thinks we should all convert to Judaism. God thinks we must all be Christians. And God thinks we should all embrace Islam. God thinks the only true religion is Hinduism. And I know what God thinks. God thinks you're a waste of flesh. Oh, oh, God prefers an atheist. Oh, oh, God, God. God thinks all people like you are hateful. God thinks all people like you are an embarrassment to creation. Self-righteous, judgmental, first to throw a stone and using his name for your own protection. thinks. The sun revolves around the earth, God thinks. There was something very wrong with Copernicus, God thinks. Abortion is murder, and God thinks. Everything that science gave us is wrong, God thinks. Women deserve it, God thinks. AIDS is a form of punishment. I hate people who blame the devil for their own shortcomings. And I hate people who thank God when things go right. And I know what God thinks. God thinks you're an idiot. Oh, oh, God prefers a heretic. Judgmental, fearless to throw the stone, and you're using his name for your own agenda. Just a man who puts his words in the mouth of God and says it's absolute truth, it's lies, and it smells like death. It's all in a day's work, taking money from the poor. Why do you think that God would need your dirty money if you want to start a holy war? Self-righteous, judgmental, first to throw stone, using his name for your own protection. Puppies need to die, and God thinks. Babies need to drown, 'cause God is neither good nor bad. God is you and me, God is everything.
Ah, seen that man live. He's impressive. You can find his stuff at voltaire.net. You can get it from iTunes. I'll make sure to throw a link up in the show notes. That's God Thanks off the album Almost Human by Voltaire, spelled just like the famous philosopher. Fun stuff. If you've ever... he's done some interesting stuff. There's a tune called Brains he did for Cartoon Network. It's hilarious. I'll have to play some more stuff later on once I can finally get in contact with him and make sure he's okay with me playing what he hasn't released on his podcast. You can do a search on iTunes for Voltaire, and you'll trip across his podcast. He's got some very funny Star Trek parody stuff that I might throw one of that on a later episode just when I'm looking for some levity. He's obviously a fan. Because the references go fast and thick, and it's some fun stuff. Okay, further left turns. Let's talk about a little Chemnosis. I've been promising to do some stuff on it, so let's do a piece. First off, if you encounter the drug PCP, as in Peter, Kathy, Peter, do not take it. There is nothing to be learned from that drug. If you do your research, and if you are planning on putting any sort of chemical in your body, I would really expect you to be doing your research. Never put something in your mouth or your bloodstream, and it will enter your bloodstream if you put it in your mouth or snort it up your nose that you haven't done research on. Second of all, avoid all opiates and cocaine derivatives. As a matter of fact, avoid the entire speed and depressant genre, period. Those are not teaching drugs. There is nothing to be learned from them. They have specific medical applications, but the ravages aren't worth the party, folks. I made that promise a long time ago when I was on that path to not walk that path of cocaine or painkillers or heroin or crack or any of that. Okay, if it's an opiate, a depressant, or it's a stimulant like cocaine or methamphetamine, nothing to be learned from it, brothers and sisters. It's garbage, and it'll chew you up. I've seen it happen to many people. I'm the guy who, when people decided to clean up from cocaine, would start calling and hanging out with me because they knew I didn't do it. And I would kind of encourage him. And, yeah, I felt a friender through that. He's been clean for several years now. But you know what? It's still taking a toll on him. To this day, he's not quite the same guy he was before he was doing the cocaine, and none of it really was positive. All right. There's some warnings out there. I'll repeat. Never take PCP. Why? I didn't tell you why. Because it is the one hallucinogen, which is proven to actually cause psychotic breaks in otherwise normal people. Yes, psychotic breaks, folks. Now, any hallucinogen can cause you to have a psychotic break if you have an underlying mental condition. If your family has a history of serious schizophrenia, schizophrenia basically covers 90% of all the hospital beds in psychiatric institutions. It's the catch-all diagnosis for hearing voices and having delusions that don't match with everybody else. A lot of homeless people on the street with schizophrenia. If you have a relative, a blood relative, had schizophrenia, who is directly in your line, and can genetically influence you, I recommend you never do a hallucinogen ever in your life. Even something so mild as an organic as psychedelic mushrooms. You know, we're not talking about seeing skulls, having a bad trip, and a crying fit. We're talking about releasing underlying mental issues. So, if you have reason to suspect that you have issues, or genetically in your family there is a predisposition toward issues such as schizophrenia, extreme postpartum depression, things which are heavily deviated from the norm, I really don't recommend you ever walk the hallucinogen path. Okay. Never fly alone. I'm not recommending you ever fly, but if you're going to take from a plant teacher or a chemical teacher, don't do what I did, and I will explain to you why, because I nearly died. I thought I was smarter than everybody else. And I did a lot of solo trips, which is not recommended at all. You really need a sitter. But when I became experienced with and had access to a lot of hallucinogens in my youth, I would go on a lot of solo trips. And I handled them quite well. One of the keys was unplugging the phone. pull the phone off the wall. Make sure that you know where the remote is. Start having a bad trip. Cartoons was always a good way to relax. Make sure I had a lot of herb available, because if things got a little bit bad, putting on a good buzz from some 420, otherwise known as marijuana, was a way to calm down and go. Now, some of you out there might think that's kind of a cool idea. Terribly bad idea. I'll tell you why. I'll give you an example. At one point, I was experimenting with what is chemically known as dextromethorphan, otherwise known as DMT, otherwise known to some as doing Robo. Why? Dextromethorphan is one of the key ingredients in Robitussin. You know why it's a really stupid idea to do a lot of Robitussin to get high? Because Robitussin has a painkiller in it, I believe it's acetaminophen, and if you do enough Robitussin to actually have a trip experience, you are taking in such a high level of the painkiller that's included with the medicine that you can have, many people experience kidney failure. No, I'm sorry, that's liver failure. Liver failure, folks. Remember, no trip is worth it. Now, I did my research, and I wasn't stupid, and I found at the time there was a generic brand called Tussin, which was nothing but a dextromethorphan syrup. There was nothing else in it. It was the only active ingredient. I was at score at the time. I was single, living by myself, and I picked up enough doses for 4 separate trips, calculating out properly what the milligram doses were. Now, I was walking in my front door with my bag in hand as my cell phone rang. Now, this was a Thursday, and I was going to have a light trip and get some good sleep and go into work the next day. Well, my phone rang as I walked through the door, and it was a friend who wanted to talk about her relationship with her girlfriend, who was an ex of mine. And we got to talking, as two exes do, when one is frustrated and needs to vent. Now, I was slowly sipping on my dose of dextromethorphan, because the stuff just tastes like ass. It's horrible. And since I was sipping it slowly and talking on the phone, I lost track. I woke up 20 hours later, tripping my balls off at that point. Pardon the swearing, but I'm trying to make some emphasis here. I couldn't make it into work. My depth perception was so bad that I couldn't drive. This was 20 hours after, folks, at minimum of 20 hours. I had to call in sick, which I never did. Well, can't say I never did it. I tried to do it as rarely as often. I had a boss at the time who was... that sort of thing was frowned upon. Now, doing research in this afterward, I had exceeded the LD50 of dextromethorphan by a factor of 50%. Now, the LD50 for a drug is something else you really have to know if you walk the chemical path, and if you don't, you should smack yourself right now. LD50 is the clinical term that is used where half of the test subjects die at this X dosage. So, if LD50 is 500 milligrams, in test subjects conducted upon animals, half of the animals died when they reached the LD50 level of drug. I had exceeded the LD50 in human beings by 50%. I'm lucky to have come back. Now, what's absolutely terrible is 99.9% of that experience is hidden from me. That is one of the only times in my entire life I have a complete blackout. I only know this. I walked down a long corridor, all alone, and all around me were billowing saffron sheets, just huge sheets all around me, blowing in a wind that I didn't feel. And I know something happened there, something important, because I didn't come back exactly the same way, and that was fine. Part of my reason to journey with psychedelics was to change who I, how I thought, how I saw the world, and to understand things that were happening to me that were leading me down a really wrong path. You know, I was headed for the psychological wall. Now, do you see the lesson there? Solo tripping? Really bad idea. There is any point where I might have done something stupid and injured myself while tripping alone, solo. I can tell you, you know, the most embarrassing thing I can remember is waking up naked in the middle of my kitchen, laying on the ground with my feet up on the refrigerator, and I realized that I had been having a conversation with the refrigerator for the past 45 minutes about the deal I had just turned down with the dude with the big ugly fangs and the contract. Yeah, it was my own little personal Jesus in the desert moment. Of course, you know, if the Christians are right and I am wrong, Jesus' moment in the desert was much more profound and important to the multiverse than mine. But in my universe, my Jesus in the desert moment was pretty impressive. Trip that I didn't exceed the LD50 on. and that was actually dealing with psychedelic mushrooms. Contract I was offered, I'll tell you about sometime. Very interesting. You know, I'm sure it was in some way a transposition of my early training as a Christian. But the point is, flying alone is foolish. Now that I know better, really shouldn't have done it. The second is, not only should you have a sitter, you should have a good set and setting. Make sure that if you're going to experience a chemical or plant teacher, that you are in a comfortable place, that you are with somebody who is completely sober and along for the ride to make sure that you can stay out of trouble. And then you enter the space. I also don't recommend you ever walk that path until you've had some serious magical training. I wasted years not understanding certain things that were happening to me because I was taking some shortcuts with the hallucinogens. No doubt there are some shortcuts, and there are side effects that you want to be careful with. I got lucky. I didn't have underlying mental problems that caused a psychotic break, though I'm sure some people might disagree if they hear me talk about my conversations with Lady Eris. But, you know, I'm not the first nutball to claim to have spoken with deity. I'm just one of the guys who was told to talk about it, so I'm opening my mouth. Okay, last part to wrap it up is this. If you're gonna do it, and I know some of you will, there are three basic rules to remember if you remember nothing else. When you are in trip space, when you are hallucinating, when you are fully under the influence of whatever you chose to partake of, chances are that is probably illegal in your area. 1. Fire always burns, no matter what color it is, no matter how pretty it is. 2. You can fly, but the only way that you are allowed to is that you have to lay flat and fly 1 inch off the ground. No running starts, no jumping from high places. You can fly, but you are required to start from a laying start. And 3, no matter how invincible you feel, knives will always cut. Always. Anything with a sharp edge, razor, knives, will always cut you, and don't go trying to prove just how fantastically invincible you might feel. And those are the 3 rules. I would like to add a small caveat. Don't dose anyone after you've been dosed. Trust me on this one. I have a few friends who would attest to that. There is a famous night of me being generous with the psychedelic mushrooms and the movie Vampires by John Carpenter. I'm sure a few of my friends will never, ever forget that night. I know I won't. But that was when I was younger, crazier, and not smart. Again, nothing spiritual was taken from that night. I really honestly think that if I had walked the path of becoming a neo-pagan before I partook of those substances, I would have saved myself 5 years of searching. And kids, please save the psychedelics till you're in your 20s or your 30s. I will say again, adolescence and early adulthood is enough of a roller coaster ride without those chemicals. Your prefrontal cortex, no matter how badly you want to think you're fully developed, doesn't finish growing till you're in your late 20s. You're always making new neurons and you're always making new connections, but your hardwire isn't finished cooking, man, till you're in your 20s. So please, if you walk that path, if you choose to do that, take your time, do your research, and save it till you're able to fully absorb what you're learning. You can do anything, anything, using trance techniques and spell work that can be accomplished with psychedelics. Anything. And it's a whole lot less dangerous. And it's a whole lot more legal. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble these days for things that I used to do in my youth. I could have gotten a lot of trouble for it at the time, but things have gotten even more insane with America's war on drugs. Everything's bad. You know, 9-year-olds have been strip-searched in our schools because one student told the teacher that the girl had an ibuprofen in her bra. Ibuprofen. It makes me want to smack school supervisors. Somebody sent a nice compliment to me the other day. He says, listening to your podcast, I like listening to the sound of your voice. Why are all of you chaos guys, you know, so mellow? And I'm not always mellow, man. Sometimes some people really make me wish that, you know, dueling was still allowed and I could walk over with a pair of gloves and smack them across the face and challenge them to defend their stupidity. But, you know, these days that would land me in jail and I wouldn't be able to see my family. Anyways, let's play a little music. Well, in tribute to a partially misspent youth, let's play a song by Tenpenny Joke called Evil Things. Now this is quite a bit different than the other two tunes I played by him last podcast, but still very, very good. Yep, said it again, good. Why? Because it's good. And if you're playing the pagan chaos magic drinking game, you're probably pretty smashed by now.
Evil things that make us act like we do. Evil dreams, the devil inside of you. Sitting in the rocking chair as the blood runs down the wall. Smash the mirror, but beware as the sun begins to fall. You don't have to read my mind to know what's going on inside. It's the reason that I'm still alive. And I don't need designer crime. I've got bigger things in mind. You're gonna hail to the king tonight. Evil things, it's all that I want to do. Sweeter sin, these demons are cutting loose. Into madness I descend, and I'm laughing all the way. Start the chainsaw up again, as the darkness comes to stay. You don't have to read my mind to know what's going on inside. It's the only time I feel alive. And I don't need designer crime. I've got bigger fish to fry. You're gonna hail to the king tonight. Thank you.
cartoon. Something about it always reminds me of Fight Club for some reason. It's flavored of it, but that's just me. Let's see. I am not going to go really long with this tonight, because it's no longer tonight. It's, sun's coming up, and, I am not going to exhaust myself, or it will be simply too long before I get another one of these out. So, I'm going to wrap it up by talking about a little bit about, well, okay, talk about is maybe the wrong word. I'm going to ask a question to the audience. You know, I am a solitary practitioner. I am curious about something I really haven't discovered in my readings of all the books I've gone through and podcasts I've listened to, personal reflection, and all of that. I've never heard anybody mention something that I've encountered more than once. As you train your mind to see on the astral plane, so to speak, to be aware of it during your everyday consciousness, that's something that develops the more you spend time you spend meditating and achieving astral space. The longer you're there, the more aware you become of it in your everyday existence. Have any of you ever encountered standing magical artifacts, constructions on the astral plane, magical machines or constructs that you have full access to, you stumbled across, you don't recall making, but they taste of your magic, if you know what I mean. And if you've spent some time doing spell work, if you found what's comfortable to you, if you found your style, your magic will be recognizable to you. Like when I write code for a machine, my style is recognizable. There are certain things about it which are easily identifiable, and you know it was me. Anybody else ever run into that? It's happened frequently with me, and I've never heard anybody discuss it. Love to hear from you. KiaDragon@gmail.com. KiaDragon@gmail.com. Write me with your opinions on it. You know, whether you've encountered something like that, have heard of something about it, have read something about it. I just can't track anything down. And I'm going to leave that with you tonight. We're pushing an hour, and I'm going to drop one more tune in and call it a night. And hopefully you're still enjoying all this and you're still listening. This is Emma Wallace. This I did not get from Jamendo. This is from the PodSafe Music Network. It's been played here before, and I'm going to play it as a little tribute to my lovely wife, Faken, for her boost of energy that got me through this podcast this evening. It's, let's see, call this up. It's from her album, A Reason to Stay Up All Night. It's called Part of Your Mudra. Now, mudras, if you're not familiar with them, are hand positions that are used in tantric rituals. I think I remember they something like 108 of them. I don't use them myself, but the spirit of the song is to Faken. She likes this tune, and it's definitely her opinion of men. Till we meet again.
But I am rather frightened. It's taken over more than your brain. I want to be. of silk, and we'll just use them in our bed. Genghis Khan.